If I don't like myself, I will not like others. This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, with instant inspiration. Now, Ellen is giving me a very hard time. Ellen is saying, Herb, you're talking about such ordinary things. You're talking about such mundane things. You're not talking about deep, spiritually illuminating things. But you're talking about these ordinary, mundane things. And because you're talking about these ordinary, mundane things, you're not getting into that deep stuff that I like so much. And I said, well, go read Eckhart Tolle. He's nice and deep. He'll give you a lot of wonderful things to think about. And she says, yeah, but he does it a little different than you do. And that's true. Okay, if I don't like myself, I will not like others. Well, I like myself. And I surround myself with people who like themselves. And everybody likes themselves. Ingeborg, you like yourself?
Yes, I do.
That's almost a threat. Ingeborg, do you like yourself?
Yes.
No, you can say it with a happy heart. Yes, I really like myself. But Sylvia, do you like yourself?
Yes, I like myself.
Let a giggle. And Ellen, do you like yourself?
I like myself.
I don't know why.
Why can I say I am God? That's why I like myself.
Okay. If I don't like myself, I will not like others. If I don't like myself, I'll surround myself by people who are just disgusting, who are just irritable. Now, Ellen and Ingeborg and Sylvia have been having a confusing experience. We hire men from the Freedom Ranch to come over and cut our grass and do things like that. And Ellen and Sylvia and Ingeborg are just beside themselves. They say, over the years, every man that we've ever had from the Freedom Ranch is a gentleman, is well-mannered, is a person that they have great respect for. Now, why? Why? I can't expect, if I don't like myself, I will not like others. If I don't like myself, I will not like others. I almost read the Noon lecture there. I can't expect to win unless I know why I lose. But if I don't like myself, I will not like others. So, obviously, if Ellen tells me those fellows from the Freedom Ranch are such wonderful guys, she must be a wonderful guy. If Sylvia tells me that they're so gentlemanly and so considerate and so easy to talk to, harmonious with our philosophy and so on, then she must be that way. And Ingeborg, my goodness, every one of these Freedom Ranch people come here and they fall in love with her. Now, Ingeborg is not a great big outgoing mama type of lady. Ingeborg is the normal type of serious grandmother type lady who expects the world to behave and cooperate and do things right in the right way. And these people at the Freedom Ranch respect that. They have not had anyone in their life expect the best out of them at all times. And Ingeborg expects the best out of them. And they give it to her. And not only do they give it to her, they fall in love with her. They think she's just the most wonderful grandma they ever had. Now, Ellen perhaps is shining out as a mama figure. And Sylvia is shining out perhaps as a sister figure, you know. But each one, in your own way, however you visualize yourself. Because though you've never been a grandmother, Ingeborg, you do act in many ways like a very serious grandma. And Ellen, you've been a mama, but that doesn't mean anything. You act like a very gentle, caring woman, like a gentle, caring mama, because that's what you expect out of people. And Sylvia, you just act like a sister. You just act like hey, kids, let's go do this. Hi, you guys. And would you mind doing this? You know, you say to your brother and stuff, and you forget. Sylvia forgets that she's supposed to give orders. Go and do this. Go and do that. Go and do the other thing. But she says, would you mind doing it? You know, would you please do it? And so forth. And so they feel if they want to do it, they can do it. And if they don't want to do it, they don't have to. But the rest of us make sure that they know that they have to. That's why they're here. We're being paid to mow our lawns and do things like that for us. But if I don't like myself, I will not like others. However, how we like ourselves is how we like others. And if you like yourself as a sister, you're going to see brothers and sisters everywhere. And that's what you're doing. And if you like yourself as a grandma, you're going to see grandchildren or children here and there everywhere around you. And really, that's what you do. I think that's the reason that Daniel and Patricia love to come to visit you, because you're the grandma they never had, the very loving, serious, definite lady. You remember, Ingeborg, you told us about the older lady who was in the bed next to you in the hospital, and how she was running her business from her bed. What was she had some sort of sporting activity, didn't she? And she had telephone numbers and people, and she was on top of it. She was no old lady. She was alert, dynamic. She was the stuff that presidents are made out of, you know, and like Reagan and those, you know, alive and alert and enthusiastic and wonderful. And Thurman, one of the oldest, I think he's from Arkansas or Virginia, one of the oldest senators in the Senate. He died 2 days ago at the age of 100.
Ah.
And I think he only retired from the Senate maybe a year or two before that. I don't remember the details, but I know he stayed in office for a long time. And we have many of them in office who are in their late 70s. And they're thinking of putting a limit on it, but I think that's foolish to do that. I mean, if the guys are good, they're good.
Yeah.
If they're good, they're good, whatever their age is. And if they die in office, you could die young as well as old, you know. Mm-hmm. And on the Supreme Court, there are four justices, I believe, who are in their later 70s and 80, and they should be retiring within the next year or so, which means that there'd be like four changes. And they've done beautiful things. They're knowledgeable. They're alert. They don't have to look up all this stuff because they've been there, done that. Mm-hmm. They've lived through these laws and the changes that need to be made. But if I don't like myself, I'll not like others. These judges are looking at laws and coming to conclusions about laws that are for the benefit of the people. And there are some very interesting laws that will be made known shortly that are under consideration and being changed by these people on the Supreme Court, and they have no one to answer to but themselves. I think there's eight of them or something like that. There's no one to answer to but themselves. Or it's probably 10, there's five, and there's four that are possibly leaving. And they've come up with some utterly outstanding type of legislation, and some of it, which is not too good from our point of view. But that remains to be seen. I would say perhaps throwing out of the legislature, throwing out of the law, prayer in schools might not have been a good idea. And then again, it caused people to respect it and to think, hey, that was something very special, and we let it go by.
Mm-hmm.
But why should the prayers in school be Christian prayers if our nation is made up of every religion?
Mm-hmm.
If every religion should have their voice there, then that means that the Muslims should have their prayer. And I know when I was in school, every Wednesday afternoon we had off from school to go to Bible training. And those of us who are Christians, we went to our local churches, and we had an afternoon Bible study, or, you know, by the minister or by the teachers there. And I don't know what the Jews did. They probably went to the synagogue. And I don't think we had Muslims there or too many other varieties. But there were Buddhists there, and they went to their program. But the type of prayer that was promoted in school was Christian prayer. Now, I am of a Christian background, so the Christian prayer was perfectly harmonious. But it was illegal. It was illegal because this is freedom of speech. This is freedom of worship in this country. And if we force people in freedom of worship to do Christian things rather than whatever their way of worship is. Now, can you imagine today in schools if they required Christian prayer and the Indian culture had their own way of worship and it was not recognized? What would happen? Ooh, would we hear about it? Would we hear about it? And because all of these religions have shown their spunk and are saying, we will be counted. We will be counted. And I think that's a rather remarkable thing that's taking place. Difficult for people who are used to having it their way, but not difficult when you realize that you go to a playground and you have all the children from all the different families, all the different cultures, all the different religions, and they all play together. They may not even speak the same language, but they like each other.
Say hallelujah.
And they say beautiful things to each other. And they take each other to their homes. And their parents say, how do I talk to this person who doesn't speak our language? Well, Mama, smile. You know, show him you're glad to see him, you know. That's how I do it. And you see, the children can teach us some very wonderful things if we will have the patience and have the humility to allow them to be who they are, not violating our own rules or ethics in any way, not violating our religion or our philosophy in any way, but letting them be them. Now, at the table today, we had two very devout Catholics, and when it was time to say the meal prayer, they bowed their head and they said their prayer to themselves, and they crossed themselves. And then we said, well, we like to say, this food is healthy for my body and filled with love. Oh, that's nice too. But that's not what they are learning. And that's not the impact that's important to them. And we must allow them that.
Yeah.
But as for ourselves, they must allow us ours. And they did. If I don't like myself, I will not like others. So if I like myself and I feel confident in myself and I feel that what I believe is good, then I can be generous, if you will, to allow others to believe what they think and believe is good. And who knows? It may be that a combination of all these things is what we really believe. Because if we are such idiots, such stupid out-and-out fools, that we say God is all, and God is in every being, then whatever other beings are expressing is God. And so the Muslims are expressing God, the Jews are expressing God, the various Protestants are expressing God, the Catholics are expressing God, the Indians are expressing God. Everyone in the universe is. And do we have the capacity to know everyone in the universe and be aware of their culture and respect it? No. But we have a chance to know our culture, our religion, and our philosophy. And our philosophy says all. And just like Jesus said too, he said, there are many flocks you know not of that I must tend. And so he was working with the Jews, but he also worked with all the others too, unbeknownst to the Jews, because he was a universal being and he was universally present. And if the truth were known, he was present in everyone, everywhere, doing everything. And that's quite charming. And so are you. And so am I. Kind of wonderful, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Just relax a little. Kind of wonderful. If I don't like myself, I will not like others. If I don't like myself, I don't like God. Because mm-hmm. God is all that I am. I love you, I love you, I love you.